talking today with Evelyn Browning-Garris. Evelyn, you've had a chance to talk with several groups here in Oklahoma and surrounding areas in the last year or so, and similar message here again today at this event at the National Cowboy Western Heritage Museum. We've got obviously some issues out there with drought, and we're just not going to see them go away quickly.
Unfortunately, not really. While you will be able to see breaks, for example, if you have an El Nino, it can bring a temporary break. But you are in a time period that is, the climate is producing drier conditions. And these are long-term climate factors. So what you're looking at is like the 15 to 20 years. It's like the dry spell you had in the 50s. It didn't go away. Instead, people learned to cope with it and be productive with it. But they had to adjust how they went about doing things. And actually, the 50s ended up being very profitable for Oklahoma, but it required a different mindset. So what I've been trying to tell people is for the next 15 to 20 years, Oklahoma has a new normal. And it's one that people in the 50s made a profit from with a lot less technology and information. But they had to think differently. And that's been my message, and I've been very pleased at some of the results I've seen, the adaptability some of the Oklahoma industries and farmers have shown has just been, I think, both amazing and exciting.
This current cycle that we're kind of in the middle of right now, how does this, you obviously you've studied meteorology and climatology from a historical perspective. How does this current run really stack up from what you've seen?
Well, the good news is you are seeing conditions that are not as severe as what you saw in the 1930s. These are not that type of dry. These are more like you saw in the 1950s, where you had repeated dry spells and then some relief. And you never got back to what you had before the 50s began. But people had enough that they could get by. They did things like run 6 head of cattle instead of where they used to run 8 head of cattle, but the price of beef was so much higher they made a profit. They adjusted to it. And that's what people did in the 50s. And what I'm looking at is some of the same factors. I'm looking at an overheated Atlantic that is diverting a lot of the moisture that used to go through the Central Plains are now being blown straight into Mexico, which is great for Mexico, but it's rough for us here. And I'm also seeing some cooling in the Pacific. So some of the breaks that we used to get with the summer monsoons bringing thunderstorms, we haven't seen the same number of thunderstorms coming to Oklahoma City and to Oklahoma in general. And so it's going to take years for the Pacific to warm up. You don't heat an ocean quickly. Mm-hmm. It's going to take decades for the Atlantic to cool down. And meanwhile, people will have to adjust.
Some folks had talked about the possibility of an El Nino this year. Is that a correct assumption at this point?
It looks very likely. I had been telling my clients back in September, it looked like we were going to be able to have an El Nino conditions. It may not be a full-scale El Nino event. That has to last for 5 months. But you know, you don't need 5 months of rain. If you can get 3 months of rain, that can make the average farmer or rancher pretty happy. Mm-hmm. It looks extremely likely that this summer we will see El Nino conditions. And indeed, our U.S. government now has declared an El Nino watch, which they typically declare when they expect in about 3 to 4 months to see one of those events evolve. When that comes, it usually brings good rainfall to most of northern and eastern Oklahoma. And the only places that don't get extra water are typically parts, unfortunately, of southwestern Oklahoma. But even those areas in El Nino frequently have average moisture. And I think a lot of Oklahomans would appreciate an average summer.
Indeed. One of the things that you've talked about in some of your other presentations that we've seen, and I know that you watch pretty closely, are some of the global events, especially volcanoes. Are we seeing some things right now that's impacting weather on a larger macro scale right now?
Yes. We have seen the results of two large volcanoes that erupted in the Arctic. And they erupted back in 2011. And they put so much debris into the atmosphere that it blocked out incoming sunlight. And after 2 years of having reduced sunlight, reduced energy in the Arctic, last summer was the coldest Arctic summer ever recorded. The amount of ice in the Arctic grew 60%. That's 900,000 miles more sea ice in the Arctic. And I started warning clients, I was going, look, if it's that cold up there in the summer, wait till that cold starts to spread south. And you've seen what's happened. It brought some very cold weather. Now, the good news is most of that dust has fallen out. But there was another large volcano that went off just recently. It's called Kelud, K-E-L-U-D. It's in Indonesia. And it blew 18 miles high into the atmosphere. And the cool thing about a tropical volcano, and one of the nice things is the Indonesians did a brilliant job of getting their population out of the way. So I think they lost a very few people, mostly in driving accidents because they were looking at the volcano instead of the road. But historically, when we have a large tropical volcano, it alters the weather. And it produces weather rather like an El Nino. And if you have an El Nino and one of these volcanoes, it makes the weather impact of the El Nino stronger. So we could even have a weak El Nino, but with the help of this volcano, more rainfall for Oklahoma.
As far as, you know, when you start dealing with a presentation like this one, I know some of the others I've heard as well, but this one, like several others, the question of global warming always comes up. Man-made, natural, cycling, what you know, I know that you've always been able to deal with those questions pretty well.
Well, I basically say both sides of the argument hate me, because I see some very good science on both sides. What I object to is when people try and cherry-pick and make it sound like the answer to climate is simple. It isn't. Man interacts with nature, and our human activities and the natural factors shaping the climate are in constant motion. I like to compare it, since we're here in Oklahoma, to riding a horse. The natural factors shaping climate are in constant motion. And if man doesn't adjust to the motion, he's going to fall off. And indeed, we've been seeing that lately.
Mm-hmm. One gentleman that heard just recently that's advocating soil health, no-till, cover crops, these type of things, says that one of the benefits of that is that with a cover, you're actually able to lower soil temperature. And he says that actually has an impact on at least the microclimate. Is that something that seemingly might be a positive if we were able to do that on a large-scale basis?
Yes. What it would do is it wouldn't necessarily affect global conditions, but it could affect individual farms. It could affect individual communities. You can change individual communities' weather by some very small things. I mean, I just talked here in this meeting with one lady who was very concerned because by having wind farms upwind from her town, the winds, the turbines disrupted the wind enough that the clouds weren't able to form. And so they weren't getting their normal rainfall. You can do these simple things and affect the individual area. And yes, if what you do is you make it so that you can reduce the amount of evaporation, you get the water in the soil and you let the soil hold it, then you get less of that steamy heat. And this creates much better conditions for your crops. There are a lot of dry weather farming methods that work beautifully. It's just what you end up having to do is think, okay, I need to farm like a dry weather farmer, not like an eastern farmer that can depend on the rain to come at 7 o'clock in the afternoon.
Indeed. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.